I've met anyone here. I don't recognize the faces. I started here last August and I've had an opportunity to work on a number of projects, budget redesign model, you know, explaining some of the internal loan things with the Board of Trustees, enrollment management. So I've been busy, pretty busy since my time here, but would really like to know who I'm talking to. Can you all introduce yourself? Just kind of tell me, who are you all, faculty, or how does that work?
Oh, okay. So we're, you know, yes. So we represent the faculty union, United Faculty of Florida. Okay. So in the state of, are you from Florida?
I was born in Georgia, but I've been in Florida for a long time.
Oh, okay. So Florida's kind of funky. So collective fundamental rights in the Constitution of Florida is collective bargaining rights and also management and worker rights state, which so the all of us here, all the faculty, we are faculty. We have full-time jobs, teaching, doing the research, doing service. So my number one priority is to my department, which I'm from the history department. Oh, and my name is Giovanna Pineda.
Okay.
And so that's my number one. I'm also the bargaining committee chair and also the vice president of the state university system for bargaining as well.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yes, yeah. So what my job here is to basically negotiate our contracts so the faculty are represented at the university, so their interest and such. So I think it depends on which state you're in, but the laws change everywhere, but this is state of Florida and that's who we are. And I will allow each one of my team members, they're all here, to introduce themselves. Irina, do you want to start? Because I see you at the top. Oh, wait, you're muted.
Irina Malandovic, I'm from Criminal Justice Department, very new to the bargaining team, so I'm learning a lot. What else should I say about myself?
Just like, that's it. That's good. Bargaining, criminal justice, your name. Yeah.
Hey, hello. Is anybody hearing me?
I can hear you, Sherry.
Okay. I'm sorry. I cannot get into my Zoom can't get into the, video portion of it. So I had to call in and then I couldn't get the audio to work. I apologize. Anyway. For what it's worth, I'm here on the phone. That's the best I can do right now. I'll keep trying to get in otherwise.
Marie, did you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Marie Letisse. I'm from the Department of Modern Languages and Literatures, and I teach French literature sometimes, but mostly Francophone literature and French Caribbean literature. I'm also new on the bargaining team, and just like Irina, I'm learning a lot, and I'm glad to have Giovanna and Scott as great leaders to learn from.
Wonderful.
Nina? Hello, my name is Nina Orlovskaya. I'm from Department of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering and College of Engineering Computer Science, and I teach multiple courses and so here I am.
Gotcha. Nice to meet you.
All right, and then Scott.
Hi, I'm Scott Lanier, president of the chapter of the union, faculty union here at UCF. And thank you very much for being on this call with us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for coming. Christy, were you going to begin by introducing I can see you have a slideshow.
Yes, ma'am. So I want to start with, just kind of giving you a high level, and I think Rebecca is going to go a little bit more into what's happening from her end, but it's important to really understand education in general, and this is a BOG regulation, Board of Governors Regulation 9.07. That kind of talks about some of the uses of E&G funds. And it's very important that we wrap our mind around, what these dollars can be used for, specifically in this environment where we've been put on a lot of restrictions on how E&G dollars dollars can be used. So in the actual regulation, it talks about these various uses here. And also, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the Crow report, but because of that report and what happened here at the university a couple of years ago, they made some changes, or we're anticipating some changes from the Board of Governors on how we should really define the uses of these dollars. So I just kind of wanted to point that out to you as we start these conversations. Now, I know a number of you have heard of carry forward funds. And so I kind of wanted to point this out. You know, prior to July 1, 2019, carry forward funds was pretty flexible. I mean, you know, I worked at the Board of Governors for 13 years before I ventured out into the university. So on an annual basis in August, we would receive these carry forward plans from the institution. And it didn't get a lot of attention at the state level. I mean, it did, but in a sense, right, from when you compare it to where we are now, you know, carry forward funds is definitely under the umbrella. But I think the most important thing to know here is that unlike other state departments and agencies, we are actually allowed to keep our dollars that we do not spend at year end. So if we have unexpended dollars at year end, we can actually carry those dollars over. Other state agencies, they are not allowed to do that. But all the state universities in the system, they are allowed to carry over those funds. At one point, we had a 5% reserve requirement, and it was not required to be held centrally. Also, universities were allowed to use those dollars on recurring and non-recurring dollars. And prior to 2018, the carry forward plans, you know, did not require all of the certifications that we now are required to submit to the state. When we take a look at carry forward after July 1, and this is a result of the Senate Bill 190 that we are now under, where we are required to have a 7% reserve requirement, and those E&G operating budgets and reserve, they're now required to be held centrally in escrow. The most important thing here too is that carry forward funds can only be used for non-recurring expenses. And I know back before July 1, several universities, and I believe UCF is one, where some of their carry forward funds was put on recurring efforts, but now we're not allowed to do that, unfortunately. Somewhat of some good news to that is that we've talked to the state about the need to release those restrictions a little bit, just to help us during COVID-19, give us a little bit more flexibility. So they're actually trying to get that lifted for us so we can start using carry forward for recurring and non-recurring initiatives. That would be a great day if we can do that, because right now we're really just restricted to a lot of things. These non-recurring efforts are the only initiatives that we could use carry forward for at this point. We have a lot of things that are happening because of COVID-19 that we need that flexibility on. So hopefully we'll be able to get that restriction lifted again. So let's talk a little bit about the operating budget. The operating budget, and I think the most important thing to remember here, is that because of COVID-19, we're not anticipating any changes to 19-20. And I think that's important for all of the agencies, for all of the universities, because people are wondering, because of what's going on with COVID-19, are we anticipating any cuts in the current year? Well, semi-good news is that Senate President Bill Gabano released a communication last week. In fact, he's released two communications. And he has repeatedly said that there is no anticipation of even coming back in the summer for a special session to talk about reducing the current year budget. So hopefully, and keep fingers crossed, that there's no major adjustments, period, to the 19-20 budget. Now, when we talk about fiscal year 21, and let me say this, that budget is still pending by the governor. I don't believe the governor has even received the 2021 budget, so we're still waiting on that. But our total system-wide budget, which includes all of the 12 universities, the medical schools, Moffitt Cancer Center, those special categories, equals about $5.24 billion. That is an increase over of $133 million over the current base year. That's pretty good. $30 million of our SUS budget is dedicated to preeminence. That those dollars will be allocated by the legislature. Now, when we talk about preeminence, I'm not sure how much you all know about preeminence versus the new category of universities of distinction. UCF was considered what we call emerging, but that changed last year. So we're now under the umbrella of University of Distinction. So for the 2021 budget, $15 million of that is dedicated to the universities of distinction. We do not know how that will be allocated, but we do know that the Board of Governors will make that determination. Unfortunately for 2021, performance funds are not on the table. That was something I know that several institutions count on a year-to-year basis. They've provided, since its launch back in 12-13 or 13-14, performance funding is almost $700 million. But those dollars are considered as non-recurring by the state. And so when I was there, we would tell the universities, look, you know, you can treat these dollars as non-recurring, because in order to qualify for these funds for the next year, you have to meet the metrics. Some universities treated them as recurring, some didn't. But for the most part, for 2021, that is not on the table this year. We do have a $7.3 million budget reduction in 2021 as a result of our carry forward balance. Now, that is a non-recurring budget reduction, meaning that reduction will only take place one time, and that forces us to reduce our carry forward by that amount. Three universities in the system were required to do that. Other universities did not have any budget reductions associated with their carry forward balance. So once we put the 2021 budget together, we will send that to the Board of Trustees, and they will review, and we will provide that information to the Board of Governors. And this is just an operating budget timeline. Right now, we're in February to May, where we're actually building the operating budget. And so in June, as I said, we have to prepare a preliminary operating budget so we can get that approved by the Board of Trustees and submit it to the Board of Governors. And again, I want to emphasize the fact, right now, we're not anticipating any cuts to the 2021 budget. Senate President Galvano has indicated, because of the state's reserves of about $2 billion, plus any federal money coming from Betsy DeVos with the CARES Act, he doesn't anticipate any reductions associated with the current year or the 2021 budget. And so that is some good news, and I hope it stands strong. Will this COVID-19 impact any future budgets? Who really knows? It really just depends on where we are and what those general revenue estimates and lottery estimates are saying. But that's another thing that Governor DeSantis is probably waiting on. You know, every year, the Department of Economic Research, they do these general revenue and lottery estimates. And so because of COVID-19, a lot of the members are waiting on those estimates and what we're seeing. And I know the latest report that I saw was as of March, and we actually saw an uptick in general revenue. And the reason why, especially at the end, but the reason why is because when this COVID-19 hit, you had a lot of people going out, buying the toilet paper, buying the Clorox, you know, hoarding all of the things they need for this pandemic. That actually caused the general revenue to experience a huge surplus, believe it or not. But that's not sustainable. And we're anticipating when the April report comes out, we will definitely see the impact this has caused the Florida's economy. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the CARES Act. You know, the good news here too is that the federal government was very polite with higher education nationally. And so for Florida, we received about $251.8 million in total allocation. And of that amount, $51 million is going to UCF. Now keep in mind, these are non-recurring dollars, and there are stipulations to how these dollars should be spent. Half goes to students, the other half goes to institutional cost. And right now we have a little bit of guidance on how we can use these, the institutional cost portion of this. And I think for the most part, the federal government recommends that universities use some of these dollars to help support students, whether it's building that infrastructure for more enhanced remote learning, or just helping a student with their cost of attendance, whether that's healthcare or food or childcare, whatever have you. All of this has been included in a guidance document. So we're paying a lot of attention to that. We're currently looking at what we can do and where we can put these funds. This really just started this week because the guidance was actually provided this week. So it's something that we're really thinking hard about. And because of the fact that we're gonna have to report how we use these dollars to the federal government. Okay, so another portion of this is the Emergency Relief Fund that the federal government provided to each state. So for Florida, the total amount given by Governor DeSantis for higher education was $174 million. He actually gave Commissioner Cochran the charge of determining how to allocate those dollars out. And so what he asked the system to do was come up with the request. And so the CFOs met, the chief financial officers throughout the system met. They came up with a total figure of $30 million that will be allocated to each institution based on a methodology prepared by the Board of Governors. And so they decided on two areas here for this support. One is to put more support towards continuity of education for incoming high school students. And the second was to advance more technology for students in a virtual environment. So this is pretty much all of the CARES Act that we know of so far that we've been privy to receive. And just to let you know, this one here, $30 million, that has not been approved yet. We have submitted this request to Commissioner Cochran, and from what I understand, he is pondering over it, and hopefully we will be able to get a large portion of the 174, if not more than that. But that is what the system wanted to put on the table. Okay, before I go into the next session or section of Rebecca take on, do you all have any questions about the 2021 budget, or want to know more about what's going on at the state level, or what's going on here at UCF? Okay, at this point, Rebecca?
Oh, I'm sorry, Christy, I do have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
So one question I have is, you said that they've released a guidance document.
Yes, sir.
Is that something that we can get a copy of, or do you know where we request
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. We'll be glad to get you that.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yes, and then the other question I have, mm-hmm. all this information is great. So please, if I'm too far off point with what you're asking, but you know, I can pretty quickly figure out how much the university needs to spend in salary for employees. But is it a quick answer to be able to tell us how much more does it cost the university per employee? So when we think about benefits and all that, right? You know, I want to think about how expensive we really are versus just, you know, how much we're taking home in a paycheck.
Well, the interesting, I just had my budget group to pull for me how much we have in salaries and benefits for folks paid on ENG, folks paid on auxiliaries and so forth. I can pull that for you. He just sent that to me today. If you give me time to pull that, maybe we can talk from that angle, but if not, I can get you that information.
Yeah, absolutely. There's time. So, you okay. know, thank you. Mm-hmm.
No, that's a great question.
Great. Thank you. Those were the two questions that I think I had from.
Okay. And my apologies. I don't see who's actually talking to me, but could you tell me your name?
I am so sorry. I'm just assuming that we're all on screen. This is Scott Lanier.
No problem. It's amazing. I see everyone except you, but hey, that okay, Scott, I'll make note of that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, too.
Okay. Rebecca, are you?
So I didn't get an opportunity to introduce myself earlier. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Academic Budget Planning and Administration. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Megan Deal when she was managing the division budget. She left back in 2018 and I joined the Provost Office in spring of 2019. So we wanted to add some information to the presentation regarding Article 23 specific items. And so I've grouped these together based on how they're budgeted and who manages the funding. So the first two items that I want to talk about are promotion increases and the incentive award programs. Those are recurring on an annual basis, and they're essentially budgeted off the top from tuition and fee collections. Those funds would not be seen in the budget. They would sit central in finance. And as those are announced in the spring, I would calculate the amount needed to fund the colleges, and then Central would push that down to the colleges. So the important thing here is that those items are budgeted from tuition and fee collections. Chrissy, if you could go to the next slide.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. The next items are awards. The Trustee Chair and Pegasus Professor Awards are managed by Academic Affairs. So there is a reserve in Academic Affairs that manages these funds. I believe one of the questions I'd heard was, where do these pots of money come from? And so they are, for the Trustee Chairs, is a recurring pot of money that is issued on a non-recurring basis because those terms end, and then they fund new chair positions. Pegasus Professors, also managed by Academic Affairs, and those are issued, again, it's non-recurring to the colleges. The last item in Article 23 that I wanted to address were the Excellence Awards. These are managed in what's considered the Provost operating budget, so separate from the reserve of Academic Affairs, the Provost has an operating budget from which he now funds the Excellence Awards. This is true for all of them except the Graduate Teaching and Excellence in Research Award. Those are funded by the respective colleges, so those would sit in their budget. And those were just the items that I picked right off of Article 23. If you have any questions that are specific to any of those or to the Academic Affairs budget, I'd be happy to try to answer your questions.
I have a question for the Excellence in Research Award, because you mentioned that that award is funded by the college or department, but we have, I believe, either two or three levels of this Excellence in Research Award. I think that one is for the department, and then the winner is forwarded to the college. And then there is excellence in research on the college level. And it's probably that those two are funded by in-unit. But what about university-wide research and excellence award? Where all colleges forwarded their winners to the research council. And then Research Council choose the winner at the university level. So it cannot be from the unit.
Correct. So it is my understanding that those would be funded then by the Office of Research.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And a follow-up question to that. So for the Office of Research, that would be the like the indirect cost that they charge for each grant, like anywhere from 30% to 49%? Like, where does OCR get, or Office of Research get its money?
To be honest, I'm not sure which funding source they use to fund the Excellence Awards, but the Office of Research does have multiple funding sources. They do have some ENG funding sources, and of course they have their overhead.
Okay. Okay, I don't know if you can answer this type of question, but one of the things that we were proposing, we don't have it written today, but something that we will be proposing in the future is to add more excellence awards, because we've actually reduced the number by two, but we would want to add more, in particular to recognize a lot of the research that we do across departments. So it would actually increase the number of excellence awards. Do you know by chance where that funding would come from? Or it would be a mix of these different pots?
So if they are in the Office of Research, I'm not sure how they're funding their excellence awards. So okay. I don't know that I could speak to that.
Okay. Okay. Does anyone else have any questions regarding excellence awards, the incentive awards, or anything on my team?
I did have something I forgot to put on the presentation that I did want to talk about. I think there was another question regarding the ADI budget.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify that is budget authority, so it doesn't necessarily sit, it would just be part of the unit's operating budget. So the limit there would be budget authority.
It would be, I'm sorry, you got cut out a little bit. You said it would be by authority of the dean or the provost?
So the funding would be in the unit's operating budget.
Okay.
So the ADI would be tracked by budget authority, which is more of a spending authority rather than funding source.
Okay. Because I think, so if you heard the audio, one of the things was, I think the imagination is that there's this pot of money for ADI, and it just sits there and it's just collecting in reserves, collecting until somebody needs it, but we weren't sure like where that fund was or where it comes from. Okay, so that's why we asked that question.
Okay.
All right. So are there any other questions? This is our chance to ask as many questions as possible from financial. Let me see. I'm just gonna look through my notes really quick, just because I know I had written a lot of these different things.
And we're also open to coming back and presenting more information as we get it. And if you have any questions, you can always send it our way. Or
okay.
We can sit here with you guys.
Okay. I had one more question regarding like College of Medicine. How's that funded? Is that also funded through ENG or?
Yes.
I'll
let you answer that. You can go ahead, Rebecca.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. So the College of Medicine receives their own appropriation from the state. So their budget would be separate from the main university.
Okay.
But it is ENG similar to the ENG main campus, UCF main campus. Just they have their separate appropriation category.
Okay. And I had a question regarding, and this is, and again, I don't know if you could answer this one, but yesterday or a couple days ago, the president, the new president of the university wrote something that the travel hiring and salary freezes will save, or not salary, you said travel hiring freezes will save the school like $11 or $12 million. Could you add anything to that? Like, what exactly does he mean?
That is something I'll have to get back with you on. I think that was something he worked directly with the administration, with the Human Resources Office and our Chief Operating Officer, Misty Shepherd. But mm-hmm. I definitely will take note of that and get something back to you on that.
Okay.
I also have, if I can ask.
Oh, yes, of course.
So in the same email that President sent to all of us, it was not only that statement that hiring freeze, travel freeze, and some purchasing freeze would save UCF 30 millions. I remember that number. But before that sentence, it was a sentence that 50% of CARE Act, that one that will not go to students but will be spent as university needs to spend. So it was a statement that half of that CARE Act will be used to cover some deficiencies. Is it possible to specify what are those deficiencies?
Yeah, well, and that was something that I just kind of spoke about. We're receiving about 51 million, so 25 million of that is for emergency student grants. The other is for institutional grant. And one of the things we're really looking at is the guidance provided by the federal government on the best use of those funds. So we really haven't decided how that will be yet. We're having those conversations now. But one of the categories we're looking at is really building upon our remote infrastructure for students. Also just helping with cost of attendance or other COVID-19 related expenses that we've incurred or plan to incur in the future. So once we kind of get a plan of action, and this is something we're working on now, then we'll have a better approach and a more defined plan on how those funds will be used. But those are the conversations we're having like as we speak.
Thank you. I also have kind of, because you got us a very good news that it looks like that in 2021, we will not have a decrease in the budget. So it's remained like as planned. And then it's still, is it correct? Did I understand you correctly?
Are you talking about the fiscal year 2021 budget?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. And that is primarily from communication that we're getting from our state leaders in Tallahassee. Senate President Bill Gavano has been very open about what his thoughts are with the current year and the upcoming year. And I think they're really framing this message based on how much they have in state reserves. Now, $2 billion isn't, in my opinion, a lot of money when you talk about the state of Florida, but he feels confident that with the projections that have come in for February, as well as the $2 billion maybe plus in reserves, plus any federal money coming from Washington, that that he feels cautiously optimistic about 2021. The thing is, the governor has not signed the budget yet. And so I understand that he will utilize his veto pen very well. For UCF, that really doesn't, we don't have a lot to veto, to be quite frankly with you. But other universities, they may have a substantial amount of facility projects that have been put in their budget or other initiatives that have been put in their budget that could be threatened with that veto. The $7.3 million that I mentioned that we will have to take a cut on for 2021, that was primarily due to our carry forward balance. Unfortunately, the governor will not veto that because that is not a line item in the budget. It has to be specific and line item in the General Appropriations Act. That is a part of our base budget. So he most likely will not veto that. If he does, he'll have to veto the whole budget. So yes, right now the message we're getting is that for the current year and for 2021, they feel like we should be okay. But by chance, if that message changes, then they will get back with the whole state.
And I would like to add to that too, that not only is it highly uncertain what'll happen in 21, we can't really predict the behavior of our students in the fall. And 50% of our ENG budget is tuition and fees. So I just wanted to make sure that we consider that even if we didn't receive a cut from the state, we are not sure of how our students will behave in the fall and what that will mean for our ENG budget.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And by behave, you mean whether they're going to enroll and pay tuition and fees?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, or even go remotely.
But for the summer, we are doing very well, right? That is what many faculty are talking. That for summer, we had the increased enrollment.
That's correct.
Am I right?
Go ahead, Scott.
I'm sorry, this is Scott Lanier again. Rebecca, if I could just clarify, did you say that 50% of the ENG revenue that we have, it comes from tuition and fees?
Approximately.
Okay, thank you.
And I think what they were also indicating is that UCF runs on a very lean budget, I think is what you were implying, Christy and Rebecca?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah, because I know a lot of schools like Stanford and all the elite schools, they were worried because their endowments fell. And I'm like, oh, it's good when you're dependent on tuition then, like UCF.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, because I think at least the anecdotal evidence is people are hopeful because most students, like, for instance, like like in California, a lot of the elite schools in California in the Northeast, they're going to probably either remain closed. And most students don't want to really pay $50,000 to $80,000 to take an online course. So. Right. That's right. Where UCF could win. In this situation, UCF might actually do very well. And that's what I guess all of us are hoping for.
Right. And again, like Rebecca alluded to, you know, the state appropriations, those are okay, but you're right. When you look at the enrollment, you know, we want those students back. You know? And if they don't come back, then, you know, the question is, are they gonna transition to remote learning? And that's just a different world for everyone.
Rebecca, this is Sarah Potter. I have a quick question.
Yes.
So I understand summer enrollment has not been affected or maybe has gone up, but like I know when you said tuition and fees, we're not really able to collect the fees this summer that we might normally, is my understanding, like activity fees and that kind of thing. So do you happen to know which fees are affected and about how much money that may cost us?
I do not have estimates on what those total fees will be. My understanding is that the fees that are going to be affected are mostly auxiliary fees, right? So like you said, the activity and service fee. I think there are a lot of classes that may not need their material and supply fees over the summer because they just can't use them. When I refer to tuition and fees, I'm referring to like the financial aid fee, all the fees that make up the ENG budget. Sorry if that's confusing.
Oh, thank you. That's helpful. I appreciate it.
All right.
Christy, would you mind just restoring our pictures if the presentation is over?
Sure.
So we're no longer sharing the screen.
There you go.
Yay.
Oh, yeah, there we go. And I can see all of you.
There we go. Thanks.
All right. Okay. Well, I would like to thank you on the part of my team. Thank you very much for coming, Christy and Rebecca, and explaining to us the UCF budget. I mean, at least personally, I find it very interesting and, you know, and I guess, you know, we may have some questions later on and we'd be very delighted to be able to talk to you again. This has been a very very informative and very pleasant as well to find out all these things about our school.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. And as soon as you can get that guidance document to us, I would love to see that. So okay. I really appreciate your offering that.
So Christy, if I remember, I'm sorry, Scott, are you done?
Nope, and this was it was a wonderful presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, so you worked up in Tallahassee with the BOT on, so now it's interesting to look at it from this direction, isn't it?
Well, yes, I worked at the Board of Governors for 13 years and, you know, yeah, absolutely. Because as soon as you get on the other side, you're like, wow, we need some money.
Yeah.
Regulation lifted. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Can you recall the last time that they allocated salary dollars, you know, like for raises to universities?
It has been an extremely long time. It has. The agencies, I think it's, at one point, they went 7 years without even getting a salary increase. But I think the last salary increase, and don't quote me on that, I was there. It was perhaps maybe 5 years ago. But I think this year it was proposed in the budget, but I'm not sure if it's going to make it.
I'm not counting the raise where they said to give it to 33% of your people, but
good ones.
Oh, that was one of the most awkward things that someone could do. But so what do you think that UCF could do to be more persuasive to say, hey, we need more money?
Well, you know, we have a new president that I feel confident that he will build that bridge alliance that we need with the state officials, with the Board of Governors. I think that's the first step. They really need to see the engagement. They need to see us in Tallahassee more. Mm-hmm. And we have an extremely great lobbyist, Janet Owen, who has done that with the new president. I understand that he's eager to get up there and start telling the UCF story. So once that happens, I think we'll be good to go.
That's what I was saying, because you were looking at it from a different direction. It's like, wow, we really can, I promise we'll use the money. But I need to get that into their minds. And I didn't know how even to where to start with thinking about that.
Well, I think the leaders we have here, our new president, they're on it.
As
soon as the social distancing and all of that gets settled, I think folks are really eager about getting up there, especially for next session.
Well, I appreciate the, you know, glimmer of hope.
We're in a different environment right now because of what's going on and just don't know what's going to happen. Nationally. So it's just a wait and see game at this point. But once all of this has settled and calmed a little bit, then I think folks will know what needs to happen to start building those strong bridges.
Okay, doke. Thank you so much. I appreciate the thoughts.
Yes, thank you.
Christy and Rebecca, even though I couldn't see you and you couldn't see me, you did an excellent job, and I really appreciate your willingness to come and do this. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you, and please let us know if you need anything else. But I'll get that information to you.
Yeah, we're going to think of our best questions about 10 seconds after you guys hang up.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, that was very clear.
I really apologize. Apparently my Wi-Fi is down. That is the problem here. And that's why, yeah, it's not the Zoom. It's for whatever reason, I keep getting this message, you know, you're not connected to the internet, which just drives me crazy. But something's going on in the neighborhood, I guess.
So
anyway.
You can use Zoom on your phone. You know that, right? And your smartphone?
I'm Zooming. I mean, I'm using Zoom for the, just to even call in. Yeah. But I couldn't get the picture at first. I mean, I could try it. I could hang up and try it. But at this point, I'm not sure it's worth it.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, so from our team and everyone, and maybe everyone wants to, we just wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you guys. And I have the best team in the whole world because I had to leave for just a minute to answer the door, and there was a lovely surprise from my team at the door.
Oh,
you
nice.
Guys are just the best.
All right. Well, I hope you're having a good birthday during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
As best as could be expected.
As best as could be expected, yes. It's been lovely.
Okay.
So what was that? I hope that was helpful, guys. I hope that
It is. Because we also get from the UFF side, you know, we have our lobbyists, and then we get their information as well. So it's good to see like how things are working. And a lot of, you know, and I think in the past my predecessors, I guess, didn't really see how the state affects UCF, but it really does. And I don't know if it's because I'm vice president of a state organization, but it really does matter to know what happens at the state level and how it affects each university. So yeah, no, I found it very useful. I'm calling her Kathy, but it was Kristen, right? Kristen Harris?
Christy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what she was saying was very useful, and I love that she's also a bit of an insider because she also worked for the Board of Governors, understanding how they work, they try to find money. And I'm glad that Rebecca was able to confirm of what my suspicions were, was that we're so tuition dependent at UCF.
Yeah, we really are. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of that, our research helps us a good bit, but it's mostly tuition. We just don't get much from the state. And I do think a lot of that is the fact that we're still a relatively young university, and we just don't have the clout. We don't have the enough people who have graduated from here who are now serving in positions in Tallahassee who can, you know, exercise influence for us. And we don't have a great, you know, foundation reserve. We don't have a lot of, you know, University of Florida has literally billions in cash in there that we just don't have. So again, that's a function of a lot of it is youth, but, you know, we'll get there one of these days.
Yeah. One day, yes. So the couple things we wanted to cover today, it was also a little bit of housekeeping, the impact bargaining. Have you had a chance to look it over, or would you like me to bring it up? Or share the screen, I mean?
Yeah, you can with the team.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Giovanna, at least a couple of us have had a chance to look at the document that you sent, and I think it'd be very helpful to us to kind of understand the rationale for the suggestions that you've made.
Okay, here, let me get this a little bit bigger by moving this.
Okay, I can pull it up on my iPad maybe. Let's see. Come on.
Oh God, I'm having trouble here. Okay, view. Okay, so do you see the document?
Not yet.
Yeah, I can see the document now, yeah.
But you guys are not seeing the document.
No.
Okay. You have a different screen open? You have like your folder screen open?
You know, it's such a weird thing. Yeah, I see what I have on. Because, you know, it gives you like multiple things. So now you see it, right? Number
yes.
two?
Yes. Okay. Now we see it.
All right, so this one, so number two, lines 21 to 20, oh no, actually 22 to 23. So at least based on student complaints, what was there before was and or, and we just posted there for with or without super observation, which that have not been resolved. So that was Scott's suggestion as well. It was just for clarification purposes.
Yeah, and if I can speak to it for a moment. And, you know, and we can discuss this. This is what we're doing. We're discussing this. So the reason why I felt this way about it was I really had a question about the and or. in this particular sentence, where I don't know that and mattered at all in having and or. And so the way we've discussed this for quite some time, it seems to me that the real impetus for concern here would be student concerns. And so I'm being quite frank that I'm pushing for a position where those two separate student complaints become a requirement as part of this clause. And then that can be, you know, with or without support or corroboration from the supervisor. Now, let's have that discussion because that's the intent. The way it was worded with and or, I'm seeing it as there doesn't even need to be a single complaint. A supervisor, maybe even post facto, can start going into someone's online classes and hunt down, you know, two separate and substantiated concerns. You know, not that I expect that at all, but I think the language would allow for that, right? It would just be if there's a supervisor concern. And if that's something that you want to have as an option, you know, we are certainly willing to have that discussion, but I think that's what we're discussing with the two different language choices.
Well, Scott, if I may, I'd like to address that a little bit. In the thinking, at least that I have, is that concerns can come from multiple places. It can be the case that a student submits a complaint to a chair, a program director, whatever the case might be. And there also may be things that happen as a result of a supervisor doing a regular observation of a class. And that's certainly something that is in the collective bargaining agreement, is one of the ways that faculty are evaluated, is that the supervisor can observe or visit the class. And as we talked before, this semester with the changes we've had, what a class looks like and how it's scheduled and so on is very different. But that's a potential source of a concern. I'm in favor of the and or, because there may be a situation, and I do not have an example because I don't know of any case this past semester that was like this, where there was a complaint submitted by a student, and also there was an issue when a supervisor went and observed that class. I'm not aware of anything like that happening. But I think we want to recognize that we could have complaints that come from students. And if complaints come from students, you know, in my mind, the separate means it's not the same thing. If I've got five students that say, you know, my instructor is always too slow getting things back, as far as I'm concerned, that's one complaint that's been substantiated because others are raising the very same concerns. So it isn't that we're looking at, are there two students that are mad about the same thing? No, that's not what's going on. To me, that's one complaint. But when we find that there's multiple people saying the same thing, that gives us one separate and substantiated complaint. If we change and or to with or without, to me, what it does is it takes away the possibility that a supervisor could initiate one of these concerns. And that was certainly not our intention, that there could be concerns that would come from a student complaint. There could also be concerns that would come about because a supervisor observed a class. And both of those we thought were important to consider. If okay, we change Sean. The and or to with or without, it says that all that matters to what I read is all that matters is what the students have to say and not what the supervisor has to say.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Well,
we understand your position on that, and we can talk about it. Thank you. Or Giovanna can feel free to talk about it, but thank you.
All right, thank you. And then the next one is down below, number six. Okay, so this is page 2, lines 53. So the only reason I deleted 53 to 56, this is number six, was we split that one sentence, which was a long clause, into two sentences. So now it reads, this is just, you know, to talk about like whether this is clear to you. So the intent, I think, was supposed to be similar, which is in-unit faculty and professional employees shall be allowed to work from home, provided that their assigned duties may be accomplished remotely. So we talked about that. Until the campus reopens to students and face-to-face instruction resumes. And then rather than having that kind of weird clause where it's except for, we added a second sentence where it says, an exception to this could be an individual healthcare employee for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary, period. We did add that one extra line, and Scott could speak to it, but I, you know, it wasn't like we were trying to add more work for Charlie to provide us more of a list. It was more as a way to give us a heads up, because we've had people on both sides, you know, and of course we're union, we represent 1700, we've had people on both sides saying, we've had the group that says, we don't want to go back on campus, we're too afraid. And then we had the other parts of like, I can't wait to get on campus. And it sounds like, and we've heard just through, again, a few people contacting us, that some people are being told they can go on campus to start work, whereas others are not. Others are told on Monday. So we wanted to know, as a heads up, if we could receive a list of the employees currently working on campus, and those, and if UFF could be notified of each employee who's told they may no longer work from home, in large part in order to give us a heads up. And Scott had additional rationale for this.
Well, I, you know, the idea came to me that we wanted to talk about that. So I got something in writing to capture the conversation. Giovanna said it very, very well, I think. It's really just kind of about the heads up, you know, right? Because we might hear something, if all of a sudden 15 people, let's say next week, stay at home is still by and large happening for everyone. But 15 people, new people are told they need to report to campus the following Monday. At some point, I wonder when we're going to get contacted by people and they have questions, and then we got to kind of figure out, like, you know, wait, what? So it really isn't about requiring or specifying how this is done or what it necessarily needs to look like, or saying we need to know exact, you know, the exact names, although that maybe, depending on what it looks like, that could be helpful, because it, you know, we would like to contact our members, but we have other ways to ask them if they're being told to report to campus and to be in touch with us. So it's really just that kind of by and large heads up that, you know, this announcement's going out, or this new assignment's being given, and you know, so that in case we got a call about it. So that was the reason for the last little bit of it. The reason for changing the other two sentences was because the people were pointing out to me, and I had to stretch here with this, that even this clause was just too fuzzy for them. In the original, where it says except for healthcare providers for whom on campus, where when it was put in there, some people are reading it as all healthcare workers will now be going back to campus. I said, what? You know, this is really like trying to like actually like not be that at all, you know. And so I had to kind of just think about it. And I'm like, okay, if someone's reading it where they just want to put it all together and healthcare providers for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary, right? Like that's just a clause saying that all healthcare providers would be deemed necessary. So I know that that's not what we were doing. And so I thought that what we're suggesting there, just kind of parceling that out of what the exception is as its own sentence, seems to satisfy a number of the people that were bringing concerns to us about this.
Scott, if I may, I'll speak for myself. I don't know necessarily whether our team would agree with me on this, but I don't have any particular issue with the change from one sentence to two at the beginning of point six, at least from my perspective. I have stronger feelings about the last sentence that's been added. And as Giovanna said, you know, we got to look out for Charlie here and what she might be asked to do. I look at this and say, this is impossible. I mean, right now, the list of people who are working on campus is very short. That's probably easy to keep track of, but we don't really know exactly what's going to happen. I see this as something that's almost impossible to do, and certainly it will be changing perhaps on a daily, certainly on a weekly basis as things go back up. And one of the things that I think we should do is encourage everybody to look at the MOU and not to look at the points individually. For example, the last sentence on number seven says the university shall provide notice of changes to facility access to the university community on its website and indicate there who may return to campus and when they may return. So we've committed to saying we're going to keep people notified about who may come to campus, who's expected to be there. I don't know that there's anybody's going to be told they can no longer work from home. I mean, to me, that's something that would have real problems for us if we did this, if we said, Scott, I'm just going to pick on you right now because you're handy. Scott Lanier, you can't work at home. You got to spend 40 hours a week on campus working in your office. We don't do that with faculty. So it might not be the case for librarians. There may be some librarians that are told, you know, the library's open again, we need you on campus. That could happen. But to me, we know what right now, there's nobody on campus. People are going to be coming back probably in some sort of phases, but that's yet to be determined. We don't know what that's going to be. And the only people who might be told, you've been able to work from home for a while, you're not going to be able to work at home any longer, are the people who serve our university community in the library, in the counseling center, in places like that. That's what I can imagine, but we don't even know that for sure.
Okay, thank you. I mean, and thank you to everyone on the call and the team, you know, for adding that additional part of the conversation to it. I mean, I have no problem at all striking those last two sentences. I was a little hesitant to kind of even put them to begin with, but I just wanted to have the conversation. But it, you know, it is a little bit of a more substantive change than where we were, you know, where everything else I think we were just so close about. So I appreciate.
Can I add one more thing, Scott?
More willingness, and I'll let you talk to your team about the keeping the two sentences as we accept, because that would be a great, great change for us. That made a lot of people happy. So if it works for you, that would be great. Thank you.
I'll jump in really quickly here and say I agree. I don't have a problem with that. And I agree with Chuck. My main problem with the last thing, which seems like we're okay on not including, is just that so often we don't know. I mean, you know, I know people think that, you know, those of us in Millikan Hall know everything, but honestly, we don't. And particularly our office, sometimes we may be the last people to hear something. I would hate to commit us to having to notify, because okay. I guarantee you we just won't know some of it. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm also very comfortable. So Sherry, thank you for offering. And I'm so comfortable that in the instances that your office might know before anybody else, that were I to ask for you or Charlie, hey, is there an update about, you know, how we're talking about rolling, you know, people back onto campus? I know that that would be provided for me. So that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have worked really well in this situation and over the last couple of months and been able to share a lot of information with you, and we're trying to share anything that we get that we possibly can. And, you know, we're willing to continue to do that to the extent that we're able to and that we know about it.
Yeah, and a couple of things that I wanted to mention. Charlie Piper probably knows more about what's going on campus than anybody else, and she's an excellent resource and somebody that I would go to if I had a question. But even Charlie doesn't know everything.
So very, very true.
Quite a bit.
Go ahead.
One other thing that you mentioned that I think is something that is important, and it's something that's important for all of us. You mentioned that, you know, some people are here and they're supposed to come back to work, or they're not supposed to. And I think one of the dangers that we have right now is there are going to be rumors and misinformation that get circulated various places. And I certainly hope that none of that comes from any of us. But I think what we can do is just what it says on point 7, direct people to the website. When access to facilities on campus change, that's where people are going to be notified. And if anybody's got any question, you know, I think my chair wants me to come in on Friday. We should be telling people, are you sure? You would be notified on the website. You would know whether your building is open, whether your department's open, whether the entire campus is open to everybody. I think the fact that we've included this in the MOU and said this is where people are supposed to get their information is potentially very helpful, and we have to direct people to use it, just as we're directing people to use the resources like the Employee Assistance Program and OIE and the coronavirus website, the Faculty Toolkit, and directing people to those things where they can get good, solid information is really, really important. And I think we can work sort of like traffic cops, directing people to the right places to get good information.
Okay. All right then. Okay, so did your team want to talk about this?
There's one more thing. Sarah had one comment, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, I've been trying to shout my way in and it's not working. I need to become more assertive. On 6, I'm fine with splitting up the sentence. I think that helps. And if it gives your people some comfort, then I like that as well. But I don't like saying an exception to this could be. I think that is an exception, that we can have an exception for healthcare employees. And I'm fine with the who's on campus work is deemed necessary. I don't know that I love individual healthcare employee, because there might be like groups, small groups of, say, like, I don't know, whatever little group say, okay, we're gonna have this unit come back in before August, or before they come back in August. And it might not be next week, but it might be before the students come back.
Well, the doctors in the health center, in the student health center, for example.
Right. So I would prefer it to read like something about like there is an exception.
May I offer, Sarah?
Sure, yes.
An exception will be a healthcare employee for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary.
Okay, say it again, an exception?
An exception will be a healthcare employee for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary.
Or an exception is.
Yeah.
An exception is, sure.
Exactly.
Okay. The exception is, okay, yeah, is a healthcare employee for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary.
Is that closer?
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, if you want to work with that a little bit or something like that and make it sound even better or close, but yeah, I mean, that's all should be all agreeable.
Mm-hmm. I think the only place where we still need to give you some time to discuss is number 3 then.
Yeah, I don't think we'll need much time to discuss that, Charlie, but.
What was on number 3?
You mean number two, right?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can't scroll because I keep trying to scroll Yvonne's screen.
Not working here either.
The and or. Yeah, this one. So number two.
Okay, my bad, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, but we should discuss that, yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I guess we will go to a brief.
You guys go to your room.
Okay. All right. So we'll go to our room. And I'm going to, I'm going to go ahead and email this to you. So you have it.
Mm-hmm. And Giovanna, if I may ask, I hate to do this to you, but while your email is open, could you please send the correct link for our caucus Zoom? Because there's so many different Zoom links these days.
Okay. All right. Today's link. Okay, so let me.
All right. Thank you, everybody. See you in a few minutes.
Thank you. See you in a bit. And I'll email that. I'll get out and then email. And my team, just wait a few minutes. I'll be there in a second.
It started. Thank you.
Okay. So I see. All right. So.
Oh, poor Brianna just had to listen to all of this.
Would you like us to start or should you start?
Do you want to wait one moment for Nina?
Oh, yes. Let's wait for
Nina. I noticed that she's not here yet.
Okay.
So Sherry, are you doing anything special for your birthday?
No, not really. I mean, you know, there's not much to do.
I don't know. Ordering a special dinner.
Yeah. Going an extra long walk.
Actually, I am going to combine two of those things. My church is just like 3 blocks up the street from me, so I can walk up there, and they're doing a fundraiser thing because we're trying to keep, you know, help people in the community that need help. Mm-hmm. And they, Four Rivers has, is providing food. You just order it and go pick it up at the church and, you know, bring it home with you. So I ordered a dinner from Four Rivers, and I will just take a little walk up to the church, and that'll get me some exercise and get me a nice dinner. So
excellent that you didn't cook. Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I have had a lovely day thanks to many wonderful friends.
Okay, so Nina's here. So did you want to start, Sherry or Chuck?
No, you guys can start because I think you need to talk over some things. So
okay. All right, so let me share the screen really quick. If I can figure it out, let's see. Okay. And then I was also curious to see how you worked the language. So so we had a discussion about it. We talked about it. The concern was, of course, not targeting specific professors and trying to be fair, especially when everything was done so jarring. You know, and some people were actually on vacation when it happened.
I know.
Everything got transitioned. So they came back and they're like, wait, my class is not online. now it's online. So it was an abrupt transition. So we wanted to be as fair as possible, but we understand, you know, and also in the climate of, you know, just doing the best we can for our faculty and also closing this MOU so that we can move forward into Article 23 and all future bargaining. We decided to agree with your and or. So separate and substantiated concerns based on student complaints and or supervisor observations / visitation that have not been resolved. And that's, if you should see that, that's on lines 23, 24. So we agree to it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Excellent.
Happy and birthday. So that, yes, and I think that means that we are done then, because I think we had agreed to everything, we'd reached agreement on everything else, so
Chuck can copy over the language to document PDF it, and then Yovana, we'll figure out how to get the signatures for you and Sherry to do like today. But do we have kind of a consent that we can start using the MOU like as of now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Scott, you had a concern or question?
I just wanted to ask Sarah and the team if you thought that with the, because we didn't look at the last part where with the wordsmithing, I don't know if you had any additional suggestions for the wordsmithing of that second sentence with the exception for the healthcare workers, that, you know, that one that we were looking at, or were you fine with what we just kind of like came up with? So maybe we could see that, Giovanna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You want me to, so it's my copy?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. Let me share the screen.
You were going to send it to us. I don't know if.
I did send it. It didn't get to
you. Yeah, I got an email from Yovana.
Okay, so let me see. Let me go down. It was number 6. Oh, God. I got like this new system at home and it's confuses me. Okay, here we go. So this one. So he starts. So were you
the
okay
exception
with this one?
Yeah, the exception is a healthcare employee for Umon Kemp. Was that as good with that, or did you think it needed to be prettier or a different wording?
Well, if you ask a lawyer if they're okay with the language, they'll probably change it every time. I do have one more. I would just say maybe healthcare provider, because again, that is like consistent with the language and the Families First Coronavirus Response Act as to who we were. We've just kind of been considering that group as like a unit as far as our COVID-19 response. I don't know that it makes a substantive difference, but healthcare employee, healthcare provider, either way, it's implied that they're employees if they're being talked about and governed by this MOU anyway. So I don't require that.
If you don't require it, I'll push for the employee. There were a couple of the healthcare fact people in the unit that felt that was the better term. And it's just more generally consistent with how we refer to anybody that we cover in our contract usually. So,
okay, Sherry or Chuck or Charlie, do you have any issues?
I was going to say,
and I actually think it actually broadens it out a little bit for you about who you might need to deem. So,
yeah, I don't have a problem with that, and I see what's Scott is saying, because when we refer, employee is like a term of art when you're almost in the contract, because that means it has a meaning that's special to the contract, that they're in unit, and this is an MOU covering in unit people, so I'm okay with that then.
Great.
If I may, there's just one thing I'll throw out there. I'm not necessarily committed to this at all, but we could say the exception is a healthcare providing employee for whom on-campus work is deemed necessary.
No, I think healthcare employee is fine and covers it.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you would, Yovana, so that's the language that we have, and then Chuck can tidy it up, and then we'll do some emailing back and forth to sign it. I believe, and I'm speaking out of turn, so please, attorney, shut me down if I'm wrong, but I believe the university intends to implement this immediately without ratification.
Okay.
And so.
Yeah, I don't.
Go ahead.
My understanding of the law on this is we don't actually have to ratify every MOU if it doesn't relate to some substantive change or issue. I mean, if it deals with money or, you know, if we were agreeing to, I don't know, change somebody's job assignment or something. But when we're just talking about these types of things, it's not really necessary to ratify these. So, I don't see any, I mean, right now, really, we're both going to try to, I'm going to try to set up a board meeting, and you're going to try to get a vote with your members again. We don't need to for this.
So I didn't want, you know, I didn't want you guys to feel like you had to now go back to the post office and spend another couple of hours. As fun as that was to watch for about an hour, eventually
it's
I got
more fun to be at.
I bet.
Nina's there with her mask on. And, and you guys were all at a distance from each other. You know, that was, and Scott's taping it all. And it just seemed like we don't need to repeat that if we can help it, with both of us understanding that we fully intend to give our good faith effort. How's that?
I actually get to speak as a president for a moment on this one.
Yay.
And just be very, very clear and transparent with you about it. I fully agree, and we're taking a position that this does not require ratification and so should be implemented immediately, and absolutely support that idea. We know that there's been talk across a couple of different universities in Florida about this issue and whether or not the ratification is really required or not, and how to do it. I can tell you that we are going to ratify with our membership, whether or not that was like a necessary thing to do. And we're certainly not waiting on that ratification to say that, okay, now we're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Unless you, and the reason why I'm mentioning it is if you thought for any reason, because we were going to do, and we are going to do the ratification electronically, and get special permission for that from PERC before we do it. And so, but if you think that then becomes an interruption toward being able to implement this immediately, let's talk about that. That's why I'm mentioning this to you.
Okay, so if you're going to ratify it, do we need to ratify it before we can implement it?
That's clear. What I heard you say, Scott, was that you're going to ratify something saying you don't have to ratify things.
No. We, as of this moment and going into this, I had the intention that once we had an agreement that we would offer it to the BU for ratification electronically. But I'm not waiting for or needing that ratification. But then I guess, I mean, if I'm putting up for a vote and they say no, then that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean,
I can tell you that the official union position is that it is not a good idea to think that there's any kind of an agreement about anything if it's not ratified.
Can I just intercede just a little bit? So at the state meeting, the reason for it is if somebody contests in the future. So if next week someone contests, it's like, oh, this wasn't officially ratified. And it could be anyone. It could be someone from the BU. It could be someone from the BOG, who knows. So that's why, to be safe, they propose doing electronic ratification.
Interesting, because, you know, the only thing that neither side did not ratify was the one-time salary payment that we made last year.
Well, we ultimately did just now.
Yeah.
Well, yes, but after the money went out. Yeah.
So that's why it's only if someone contests it. So.
But how long it will take, Scott, for
a question?
Very fast.
I'm sorry.
Very fast.
I do not know the timeline. I know that I've been on a call every week with UFF statewide, and I know that they have now already run at least one electronic ratification for an MOU on a campus, and did that by first getting a permission from PERC. PERC is granting permission for the electronic ratification, and they're granting kind of like we understand, and we're not going to make a big fuss about this if nobody else does, kind of way. But they're allowing for it, but they're not allowing for it by and large. They're doing it for individual petition. And so UFF is already in place that if I let them know we have an agreement, we want to ratify it, they're going to get the permission from PERC. We're going to do it electronically. I don't know, we're trying to do it as fast as we can, but I'd have to ask them if that meant 3 days, like this could happen Monday, or a week, or I don't know what the response rate is.
Okay. I'm trying to think about this.
I can certainly find out.
And yeah, we'll find out. I was going to look at the email right now. Oops, sorry.
I don't know right off the top of my head that there's anything in this that is that time sensitive that we would have to start implementing immediately.
At least.
Yeah.
I can think of two things.
Okay.
Okay.
But if you're going to ratify, hold a ratification vote, I don't think we can implement, because you could have your members could decide not to, and then we'd be in trouble. So.
But like you kind of pointed out about the $1,000, we kind of got that done and then ratified later, and if they said no, then we were going to have to problem solve and figure out what to do, and be sent back to the table. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, yes.
So I kind
we
of
agreed
feel like.
At the time.
Well, I don't know. I'm just willing to make the announcement that we agree this is implemented, that this is effective immediately with the tentative agreement. I don't know.
So I'm looking
all right,
at different
emails. And then for some reason, I mean, because if we hold a ratification vote and we could do it sometime next week, but still implement this immediately, it's going to take 2 weeks, if we can implement it immediately and then our faculty say no, all they're saying no to is we have to come back and keep talking about this. And maybe we can identify like the very specific thing that they had an issue with or something. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Just yes. That's exactly what I just read. So, so I read what they're doing at the other university. So they implement immediately. They do the electronic ratification. No one thus far has voted no for their MOUs for a COVID MOU. But if that were the case, it only means that we come back to the table to impact bargain.
Okay.
There's something else I think legally that you probably know of, but we can talk about it later when we're not recording.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll agree to implement pending ratification, and now I have to decide what I'm going to do about going to the board. Okay. Well, that's my problem, not yours.
Okay. Well, Sherry, what I'm going to do next is find out what this timeline is, or Giovanna will, be in touch with UFF, find out the timeline, get this process started, and see what the process would be, and we could certainly kind of get back to you. So if you wanted to, kind of approach it maybe that way with the BOT, like, hey, we're all thinking about this, and so. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so are we going to be off? Thank you. Are we off recording, Briannis?
Let me stop it.